Hello, reader. You're plugged in to another episode of PageCast, brought to you by Jonathan Ball Publishers. We hope you enjoy it.
Hello, Mulweli, and welcome to PageCast, a Jonathan Ball podcast. My name is Sinega Mandoi, and today we will be speaking with Ulebu Mazibuko, the author behind Bantu Knots, and today we'll be talking about her latest offering, Fabrics of Love. Help me welcome the amazing Lebu Mazibuko, and the crowd goes crazy. Lebu, how are you, sis?
I'm good. Mm-hmm. I'm good. It's been a fun ride so far since the book launched. Yeah.
Of course. Can you tell us the pressure? First of all, you had Bantu Knots. You started with Bantu Knots.
Yeah.
And before that, your background was more in poetry. So Bantu Knots was sort of like your first full body of work.
Yeah.
And then now there was Fabrics of Love, and there was a lot of good views of Bantu Knots. And do you feel any pressure to be like, okay, now let me come with my second book?
Yeah. Mostly the writing, I think. I don't want to drop the ball. People really did enjoy Bantu Knots, so I had a lot of anxiety while writing it. And that's why it kind of helps to have a publisher who's like, nah, girl,
yeah,
it's okay, you know. But I was in my head quite a bit. And I was trying to challenge myself, because Bantu Knots is written in first person, follows one character, single character. This has multiple points of views. And also just the third person narration was new for me. But yeah, I want to grow as a writer, which is important for me. But also I want people to enjoy it, you know?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And we totally did. So before we get into the depth and the themes and everything, I wanted to say this about the book. You started in 1999 with the book, which was quite interesting, because when I finished the book and I was done, there was, okay, let me put it this way. The most raw piece of art that has ever come out of South Africa was Izo Izo.
Yeah.
And there was something about this book that made me reflect on Izo Izo, because it was very relatable. Mm-hmm. And anyone, especially from the township, who can, like, who've watched Izo Izo, I feel like they related to this book, because it was raw, it was in your face, it was honest.
Yeah.
And I've always thought, as a writer, it must be very difficult to write about a story or stories about very things that are relatable, because how many times can you write about an apple, right? Mm. So it was very much raw. Can you tell us about the process of that? And did you see any link between Izo Izo? It could be just a me thing. It could just be a me thing.
Because it's a township story.
Yes.
Yeah, I think with stories like Izo Izo, it's a township story and it's our lived realities. But for me, I always think senses when I write. I want, even when I'm reading, I wanna see it. I wanna hear what's happening. I think about food a lot, which I think you'll get in both books, in both Bantu Knots and Fabrics. But Fabrics, I kind of went with the food. I had fun with it.
Yeah.
But I think about all the senses, the smells, what we're hearing, because also townships are very loud spaces. There's constantly music. There's constantly talking. You can hear your neighbors also, because of how congested it is, the overpopulation and how close the houses are built next to each other. But yeah, it is about those senses, which is why I try to put that into the work. And I suppose that's why you're saying it's quite vivid.
Yeah, it truly, truly was vivid. So I wanted to start with the character that we first introduced to, Mwiboni.
Yeah.
Especially the first sentences. Can you please read that for us?
Okay.
Yeah.
Mwiboni rested her head on the two thin pillows she piled on top of each other, fixated on the corrugated iron roof above her. She finally spotted the fourth hole where the water had seeped in during last week's heavy rains that had flooded the kitchen.
Beautiful. So when I first read that, I saw myself, first of all,
Oh,
because I
okay.
grew up in the township, obviously, and
Yeah.
my home was a shack. And I've had those moments where I am sleeping and I'm just dreaming. For me, when I read that, I was like, where is this girl thinking? What is she thinking about? Where does she want to go? And it also punches in a way that what's leading her to this moment? So what was your initial idea when you wanted to open up the book with that line?
I wanted to paint Miponi's world, also because it's quite a contrast to where she ends up, and why it gives you a motivation as to why she wants to leave without really giving the depth, because there's quite a lot that she's running away from. But I think even the physical environment, before we get into her mental state and the emotions, but the physical conditions of her environment are part of the reason why she needs to get away and why she wants better for herself.
So I also wanted to talk about marriage. The all the women, there was this idea that marriage is sort of the thing, marriage as a dream, and marriage is like a social pressure for all of them. If we start with Ukeke just wants to marry Moibone to any man or the with money, and we also look at Buang was she bought a dress but she never made it to the aisle, and girl we have Usbu has been trying to get to marry her. Why did you want to showcase the marriage of aspects, either as a dream or as like a social pressure, especially looking at 2025 and from 1999?
I think, I mean, we're raised with this idea about a knight in shining armor coming. You read all these fairy tales about it, and it's almost instilled in us. And I know even as Black girls, we're almost like brides in training, from a young age. The cooking, the sweeping, it's always you always hear your parents saying, but how are you going to feed your husband? How are you going to iron his clothes if you don't know how to iron, you know? So it is about that, and trying to figure out why do we want it? What are the reasons? And and that's why I have so many of these women who look at love in different ways. A character like Yael, it's just really a hopeless romantic
Love her.
at heart, you know? She wants love. But a woman like Buang, who is very successful, who has all these accolades, but yet people see her as if something is missing from her life. You almost aren't complete or a whole woman if you don't have this husband, you know, when it's the one thing that people kind of point at to highlight as some sort of failure. But also I was looking at marriage in the sense, or love even, in the sense of how the people in your life, our grandmothers, our parents, how their relationships affect how you look at love. Somebody like Rosemary, a character like Rosemary, is almost God and afraid of love because of seeing how her mother has been injured by it, the betrayals that have occurred around with the people, and she hasn't seen a healthy kind of love, even though her grandparents, I could say, had it. But the loss of her grandfather losing his wife has really damaged him in many ways. So she is afraid of letting her heart go there.
So do you think there's a link between, because we see a lot of women choosing not to get married now, and women, there's like 20% of women who the stats have reported that don't want to have children, like things like that. There's like an evolution with women. And do you see any link between what was happening then to now, or the evolution or the change that has occurred over the years?
Yeah, definitely. I think a lot of the times it was economical reasons. That's why women got married, and that's one of the things that is happening, or part of the things that are happening in Buang's world, where her father keeps bringing up the fact that she's still stuck in her parents' house. And for many of our parents, they only really left the home after marriage, which is why it traditionally you the groom's family comes to fetch you from your family's home. But yeah, it was almost like the next step, but also for economical reasons. Men were the breadwinners. Men were the ones who would go out there and work. But as women are becoming more independent, women are in corporate spaces, in academia, and all, you know, there really isn't, you have more options. We do have more options. And a lot of women feel complete and satisfied with their lives as is, you know. There isn't anything missing, you know. Socially, you have your friends. And I think our friends are an extension of who we are. Our friends do become like family. I think even with Rosemary, when she goes to varsity, she finds a sort of sisterhood that she's been looking for. And I think it's like that for a lot of us as girls.
So speaking about Rosemary, so when Muibuni comes for the first time with her dad, there was this tension between Rosemary and Muibuni, and it was quite interesting to see her change when she comes back from university. And talking about that, she was looking for like a circle where she belongs in, and in my mind I was thinking, was she being territorial? Because this is my space. Now here comes this girl. Don't know her. And like there's, to an extent, I've felt like Rosemary was becoming her mother in a way. Because also in the end, you see, there was a conversation that she was having with her mother. Remember, she becomes like sort of the breadwinner. Mm-hmm. And her mom was asking her, how is it? How are you? Mm-hmm. And she said, I think she said something about, I never really tell her the truth, something like that. I'm not sure. So I wanted to talk about that, like the change of heart for Rosemary when she comes back from university. Do you think that's change, or it's created by the university life, now that she understands what sisterhood or womanhood is when she comes back? And I think it was after Pretty Girl just gave birth, and everybody was there. Muibuni had just came back from Free State, and now everybody was just home, and she was coming home after a long time she was in university. So do you think the change, what was the cause of the change of heart?
Rosemary is a tricky girl, and she was the hardest character for me to write.
Ooh, I was gonna ask.
Yeah, she was. But it's also because it's not really territorial. She's the protector. And she's the most observant character in the story. Yeah. She sits back, she analyzes, she searches for the truth. And I think when Muibuni comes in, she can see that something is amiss, but she also understands the dynamics within the home better than all the other girls. Girl is living in her own little world. Buang has so much that she's carrying. Lemohang is losing his faculties. Mm. So here's this next burden, and who has to carry this burden? Her mom.
Yeah.
And nobody really is looking out for Buang besides Rosemary. So the more she gets to understand Muibuni, and she starts to see Muibuni and her relationship with her parents, she feels almost obligated to start protecting her without saying it, because she doesn't say anything to anybody. She just has moments where she feels she has to defend her sister. Yeah. She has to fetch her sister. She has to, you know, she has to be the adult in this home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Love that. So I want to talk about Muibuni's silence. You know, in South Africa, we struggle a lot with gender-based violence and everything and everything that involves that. And we know what happened to Muibuni. I don't want to ruin the book for anyone who's going to listen to this. So, I thought this was very, very important for you to do, or to write or not talk about. So Muibuni goes home, right? And then she comes back. She does what she does at home. to come back. And then when she comes back, the same people she was leaving behind follow her. And in my mind, I'm thinking, just tell them what this woman made you go through. What happened to you? But you were so smart about this. It became like the silence thing that is in South Africa, where women do not say, this happened to me. And I thought that was very, very important that you wrote about that. You didn't make it seem, how do I put this? You didn't put it out there, because a lot of women struggle with it and they don't say it. And it was there in your book. And I was like, that was so important that you put it that way.
Yeah, because there's a lot of shame that is attached to it. But also in Black families, I don't think we really know how to be vulnerable. There's a lot of secrets in the book, and the main thing that I was tackling was the generational trauma. The grandfather is carrying his own trauma, dealing with grief, but really it's not really. Not dealing with his pain and his grief. And that kind of bleeds onto his daughter. And her, Wang, is also carrying quite a lot. And that trickles onto her children. But in many Black homes, we don't talk. We sit around the table. We talk about everything else that's happening outside of our homes, outside of our spaces, but not really the core issues that are affecting a family. Even affection is something that's difficult for us. I know I didn't grow up in a home where the I love yous came.
Never.
You know, so it's not even just talking about pain, but even just expressing love is done silently. So for Miponi, we just don't talk. But also with her, when our parents hurt us, or traumatize us in some ways, there's still part of us that wants to protect them in some ways. And I don't know what that is, you know. Even with my family is fantastic. I don't want it to come across like, yo.
Yeah.
I have a great family, but there's certain things that I'm not going to talk about because I'm protective.
Yeah.
Of them. I think about their dignity, and I want people to respect my home and the family that I come from. It's almost like this responsibility that we bear, that even with our stories, you need to think about how people are going to perceive things.
Okay. What did you learn about yourself writing this book? Because I feel like it's quite deep. It's very, very deep in a way. What piece of you had to relearn, or you had to come back to put this book together?
Wow, that's such an interesting question. I haven't thought about that. When I write, I just write. You know what I mean? I allow the story to guide me.
Yeah.
I allow myself to have fun with it. But I try not to interfere with the story. I think Bantu Knots was a lot more personal for me. I was trying to get, I wanted to create a story that I wish I had growing up, being lonely as a teenager and all of that. So that's why I wrote Bantu Knots. But then with this book, I took bits and pieces of myself, right, and the people around me, but I really didn't want it to be about me. I can't say Gail is Lebo or Rosemary or Miponi or Buang. No. But it does really highlight the women in my life, my mother and my grandmothers. A character like Buang is my mother and my grandmothers in one. The three girls, Miponi, Rosemary, and Gail, are the women in my life, my friends, the women that I interact with every day. But Yeah, and I just want women reflected properly. I don't know any soft and meek women in my own personal life. Women in my life are very strong. I know women who carry our communities and our churches and our households. So when I watch and read about these soft, polite, gentle women, yeah. Like, who are they? You yeah. know? So yeah, I do write rebellious women.
Yeah.
But great women. Yeah. Because and I suppose there is a part of myself in that. Yeah.
So I wanted to ask the title of the book, Fabrics of Love, because I read in the acknowledgements that you changed the name of the book. Fabric, when you look at fabric, has those different textures, has different layers, have different colors. And you said Fabrics of Love. How did we get there?
There are a lot of love stories. But I think also the fabric, it's really what is the fabric of this family or any Black family. In this particular story, there is the good and the bad. What is holding up this household? Because there are a family about image. There are a family that is very conscious about how people look at them from how they dress, how they speak, how the family, how the community views them. So it is about appearances and keeping up appearances. But underneath all these layers, there is the pain, there is the trauma, there are these buried secrets, but also love. There's a lot of love. There's beautiful parts of this family. The food, the education also, you know.
It's a big part of
it. Yeah. Part of this fabric in this family is education. Yeah. But also fabric in these garments, what they mean to us. Buang holding on to her wedding dress. There is her even the fabrics she uses to protect herself, be it the cloth from the church, what that means to her, what that even means to Lemohang. These garments that we wear as armor. But also just keeping up appearances.
Of course. I think that was the brief one, especially when it comes to Buang. Buang, right? I'm Tunzi. I want to talk about Mtunzi a little bit. Because Buang really did not like him. There was a quite interesting way. Well, it was an interesting way. I think when you wrote about Mtunzi, we all like, oh, this guy, gangster. Want to be into prison and everything like that. And then there was this soft moment when you went to the grave, a graveside to visit his parents. And when he spoke to them. And then you remember, no man, here's a person, here's a child. A lot happened to this person. And I loved that softness. And I think it says to people who they say they don't judge a book by its cover.
Yeah.
So it was sort of a thing like that. He has a child. This has always been a child.
Yeah.
That circumstances. A lot of things happened that molded him to be the person that he is. And society will always judge him for that. But when you brought that softness, when you went to the graveside, that was so beautiful. And also you made me laugh. There was a part after Mtunzi had spoken with his parents and you're like, girl, keep him warm. But still, it is that made me laugh. Because I could see it. I could see that moment happening. So I just wanted to speak about that softness that you brought for Mtunzi.
I spoke about rebellious women, right?
Yeah.
But it's because for me, I believe in flawed characters, even with the men. The story is told through the lens of the women, but it's also about the men in their lives, the men they fall in love with, the men they pursue, because these girls pursue their men, the men that raise them. And in as much as we want to bring light and shade to the women, it's important that we also show there's light and shade in these guys.
So the biggest question that everybody has been asking, I'm getting a sequel. For me, I feel like the book is complete because we're looking at the POV of the women. So all the other stories, I know people want to know what happens to Mtun, what happens to Buang, what happens to all the other people. Are we getting a sequel? Yes, no, maybe.
Well, that was the plan going into it because I couldn't tie all these threads into the story. So I'm not going to say when. But yeah.
There's a possibility. It may come.
That was the idea going in. Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming. And I really, really enjoyed this book. I think it was one of my favorite books that I read this year. And it's going to be on my top 10. I know.
I just saw that.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of PageCast, brought to you by Jonathan Ball Publishers. Did you love what you heard? Don't just stop at the stories. Buy the books. Visit your favorite bookstore to grab your next read. And remember to subscribe, share, and join us again next week for more fascinating conversations. Until then, happy reading.